This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's currently 9/11/2010 here in Japan, and it's still September 10th, 2010, stateside, where I'm joined on the line by regular guest Lieutenant Eric Schein. Lieutenant Schein is a graduate of the United States Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point, and he can be found at martiallaw911.com and crossingtherubicon.org. He also hosts a program on RBN on Sundays at 2 p.m. Central called In the Zone. Lieutenant Schein, thank you for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me, James.
Well, Lieutenant Schein, as we sit here in mid-September 2010, it's been almost 2 months since the BP spill was completely capped, according to the mainstream news. So I suppose that little disaster is all done and we can all go back to our beer and cheeseburgers, right?
Right. I don't think so. You probably heard the reports about the plumes where they've used the... I mean, they dumped, I think it was close to a million gallons... I believe it was gallons, it might have been barrels, of the dispersant, which is a chemical that's worse than the oil. And when it's combined with the oil, it makes the oil buoyancy neutral, to where it doesn't float and it doesn't sink. It kind of hangs out in the middle of the ocean.
Right, and that's Corexit?
That's one of them. And I believe that was, you know, they probably use more than Corexit. There's several on the market. But they basically cornered the market on it, and, you know, we the taxpayers are the ones that are paying for all that.
Unfortunately so. So what do you know about the health effects of those types of dispersants?
This is nasty stuff. I mean, they shouldn't... It was done more as a public relation stunt to hide the oil and sweep it under the rug, because it's actually easier to reclaim it if they allowed it to float to the surface and brought in, you know, skimmers. But the fact that there's larger issues here, that, you know, the fact that we don't have skimmers, that BP didn't have the resources, as they said that they did, to reclaim any kind of oil that came off of this, the aftermath, I think, of what's going on, where they're basically trying to say that, well, 90% of the oil has either dissipated, evaporated, or was burned off, is unbelievable. I mean, anybody with any kind of formal education, or I think even some, you know, street sense or common sense, understands that there's no way that millions, I mean, tens if not hundreds of millions of barrels of oil is just going to somehow dissipate and or disappear and not, you know, end up in the environment and in the ecosystem.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you bring up a good point there, that it almost is literally like sweeping it under the rug, just so that what's not seen can't be, felt in the same way. So absolutely, it's a pretty ridiculous response in a number of ways. But what do you think about the reports about, for example, Halliburton acquiring oil cleanup services just a week before the spill actually took place?
Well, and Halliburton moved out of the country to Dubai. It's not even an American company anymore. And so you got to really look at this, because even British Petroleum... So this is a point I've been trying to make for some time, and I'd like to cover this, and I'll get into it more in the separate topic entitled or involving Germany, about these foreign and specifically even royal corporations like Royal Dutch Shell... That is a shell company for the Royal Dutch family, you know, Queen Beatrix and others. BP is no different. British Petroleum is a corporate extension of the royal family and kingdom, the United Kingdom, and England or Britain as a titular head to the United Kingdom. And it's carrying on economic warfare and using these corporations to do it against the American people. And Halliburton is no different, because now... Think about that. They moved to Dubai. What is Dubai? It's a kingdom.
Exactly. Right.
Well, I was going to say they're using the corporations, just like castles in the past, as a virtual castle of sorts, to attack the American people, to attack our way of life, to attack self-governance, you know, of, by, and for the people, to attack the concept of a republic, and to, just like they did in... not only Germany was not the first republic, you know, on the planet, but as they did in Italy numerous times over, to to where when they converted to a serfdom or a kingdom or even some type of imperial state, they steal all of the public trust.
Right, exactly. And as you say, we will be getting into that in our separate interview. But right now, I'd like to concentrate a little bit on BP itself and its history, because I understand it hasn't always, of course, been called British Petroleum, but it has been around for quite a long time. And if I'm not mistaken, it was in...
Anglo-Persian oil.
Right, and wasn't that the interests that were being protected when the CIA moved in with Operation Ajax into Iran?
Well, and Mossadegh, and what has gone on not only in Iran and Iraq, going back into the 50s, if not well before, things that England and the United Kingdom had carried out in these countries. Think about this, and I hate to, go back to this issue, but it does, even BP has been involved in overthrowing numerous countries and carrying on coups within these countries. When 9/11 happened, it was 15 out of the 19 terrorists were from Saudi Arabia. Did we attack Saudi Arabia? No, because it's a kingdom. And because George W. Bush was holding hands with the royal crown family of Saudi Arabia, and we attacked Iraq, that was, even though people say that Saddam Hussein was a dictator and a very evil man and that he was using all the weapons of mass destruction that we had sold him through Donald Rumsfeld and others, that people ignore the fact that it was a republic. It was a system of self-governance, supposedly of, by, and for the people. So we, as a supposed republic ourselves, stayed out of a kingdom, didn't attack it, even though 15 of the 19 terrorists came from there, and we attacked a republic.
Right, we should get into the House of Saud itself, because as I understand it, that is in fact itself kind of a hoax that's been perpetrated on the Saudi people.
Well, but even that, who owns the... and you got to look at this too, because even, and I talk about even Israel and other countries, the crown families, even in places like Judea or Israel, weren't even... it's like, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, Stalin was not Russian. He was Georgian. Hitler was not German. He was Austrian. They bring in these, and it's a sign of these royal families. They like to do this with their extensions. They bring in somebody from outside.
And Obama?
The debate about the birther issue in Kenya and everything else. If you start to look at even our own presidents, and a lot of people don't realize this or understand this, but you look at even people like Gerald Ford, I think he was our 38th president, that's not his real name. His real name is Leslie Lynch King. He changed his name. It's the only president that got in to be vice president. We used to elect our vice presidents and not just nominate or appoint them. But it made it into the presidency without being voted on. And there was no debate over who is this guy, where did he come from? Oh, you mean he changed his name? And that's not his real name. His real name is Leslie Lynch King. 99% of the people out there don't know a simple fact like this. But if you start looking into the King family, it's just like Davis Walker Bush family. George Herbert Walker Bush got his middle name Walker from getting married into the Walker and Davis families. These are enormous power broker families, just like the Fahd and Saud royal houses from the Middle East. There are other enormous families here in the United States, if not even in England, like the Windsors. The Windsors are German royalty, and if you start looking into all these power broker families, you start to realize, if you look at, a great number of our presidents are actually related to Queen Elizabeth, a member of the German House of Windsor, which is actually Saxe Coburg Gotha.
Right, right. Well, that's not only true. It's actually kind of humorous that recently there was a schoolgirl who was just doing a school project somewhere in Georgia or something. But she came up with the list of relations between the presidents and the royal family, and quite more impressive than anything I've ever seen before on corporate media, at any rate. So certainly there's a lot to explore there, and I had no idea about President Ford/King either. I did not know that.
Well, but King is another one of these power broker families, and I know about it as well, not only from, you know, President Ford's real name being Leslie Lynch King, but a bunch of individuals with the last name King have been involved in my own affairs, in the corruptions with Homeland Security, the Coast Guard, you know, this whole concept of creating the Department of Homeland Security, which was initially to be called the Department of Homeland Defense, was something that just didn't happen in the aftermath of and in response to 9/11. This was something that was planned well in advance.
Well, I've often heard, but I must admit I've never been able to find particular documents that the Homeland Security Department was referred to at least as far back as 1993. But what about your own research? What have you found?
Well, I found documents that show that it was initially to be called the Department of Homeland Defense. Just like you remember how they coined the term for Operation Iraqi Liberation, which is the acronym OIL.
OIL. Right.
Right. And they did this almost like they do it as a stamp or as a way to make fun of the people and say, look, we can put this out here like this, make fun of what's going on, tongue in cheek, and do it in a very twisted fashion. And what are you going to do about it? You can't do anything about it. And they you know, whether it's a cat or a dog or whatever, they use it as a pissing right, for want of a better way of saying it, to mark, quote-unquote, their territory or something that they have done. The individuals that I'm talking about, they're numerologists. Their families go back not just hundreds of years, but thousands of years, and not here in America, but throughout the world. Even into, and I've talked, you know, and like I mentioned about, you know, Germany in a future topic, is that the Habsburgs, if you really look into world history, and I would suggest that people read the book by Philip Bobbitt called The Shield of Achilles, War, Peace, and the Course of History, he even talks about a new world order in there. And it's a new world constitutional order. It's a reinvigoration of the worldwide system of United Kingdoms. And that's why I bring up not only about Saudi Arabia and the royal families, but even Dubai, where, you know, Halliburton moved to, it's a kingdom. The Port World, United Port World, or no, wait, Port World Lim, I'm trying to think of the name of it. It'll come to me. But it was a deal with AIG, where AIG was going to take over control of over 54 of our major ports, or 28 of our major ports and 54 of our minor ports. And AIG is an insurance company. Think about what happened with 9/11 with Silverstein, where 6 months before 9/11 happens, his contract with the insurance company is changed to include terrorist attacks.
Right, that was when he was actually signing the lease initially. He had that written in specifically, and that was just a few months before 9/11. But certainly there was all sorts of insurance scams going on 9/11, and we have whistleblowers from Martian McLennan and other places talking about the way that they were playing a central role in what was happening that day.
And they still are, and that's where I've kind of like, you know, in interviews that we've had before, I've been kind of rushed and just pouring out information, and I apologize for that, and, you know, hopefully we've corrected that now. I put it all on myself because, you know, like I've mentioned to you, you uncorked me because they've stuffed so much information in into me. It just, you know, comes out in floodgates, and I'm trying to get out as much information as possible. But it goes to dead peasants insurance that I've spoken about before, where, you know, even in Michael Moore's movie, it was laid out about how Walmart and other corporations were insuring their own employees and collecting on the death benefits themselves and putting it in their own pocket. It wasn't going to the families. Abramoff, who's tied to Tom DeLay, was doing the same thing with the Indian tribes, where he had set two Indian tribes against each other, and they were basically vying for gaming rights. One tribe got the gaming rights, yeah, and he was actually pitting them against each other and profiting from both sides. You know, it's just like being defense counsel and plaintiff's counsel in court and sitting in at both benches or both tables. But Abramoff goes back to the tribe that lost the gaming rights, didn't get the gaming rights, and said, hey, you know, we feel really bad, but what we'd like to do is help you out. And what we'll do is we'll set up life insurance or you know, death benefits for all the members of your tribe. He did this, and lo and behold, the benefits were not paid out to the individual tribe members. They were paid out into his private trust. And this is not the only other instance of this. There were two women in Los Angeles. These are signs of a larger racket or program of racketeering going on that is unbelievable. It's the same thing that went on in Rome, you know, several thousand years ago, where, and this is what goes on in kingdoms, where the royal family, the crown families, the nobility, they insure their slaves, they insure their soldiers, they insure their serfs or peasants or workers, and then when they die from whatever means, from being worked to death, from being involved in an illicit war, etc., it is the family, not the family of the injured or dead soldier or employee, but it is the crown families that get paid out on this. These are rackets that have been going on for hundreds of years, and now they brought them to America, and they're using them against our own soldiers and people like myself, railroad workers, federal maritime officers, officers in the United States Merchant Marine, who have enormous death and injury benefits. And rather than being able to gain access to them, and that's why they've been after me, even in a lot of these instances, they are getting paid out when individuals commit suicide as well. So if they can get somebody to go postal or, you know, suicidal, they still get paid for the death of that individual. But there were two women up in L.A. who were insuring the homeless, and it got to the point where they were even collecting their Social Security checks and doing all this other stuff and filing stuff for them. They got caught because they got so greedy that I guess the homeless people had figured out a way to survive, and they weren't dying off quick enough for these two ladies to get their payments on their deaths, that the federal and state authorities finally caught wind of it, figured out what was going on, and these people were insuring and profiting personally from insuring homeless people.
Well, that's just a horrific example, but that is an example at a personal level. But as you say, there is some sort of institutional, there seems to be almost like there's been a switch flip to allow this sort of behavior to happen on a much grander scale, that the word's gone out somehow. And of course, it would be naive to assume that these types of scams haven't been going on for a long time. But I think it almost seems like there has been some sort of shift recently in recent years, especially since the repealing of Glass-Steagall, that the financial services sector has just gone absolutely crazy with these types of scams, and it seems like it's the final looting of the ship before it goes down. What can you say about
it? Well, I was going to say they're doing to us exactly what they did to the former Soviet Union. And think about that, and this goes into the other topic about Germany, but it's tied directly to all of this. After World War II, the two largest republics in the world, the United States, of course, and yes, even the Soviet Union. And we may disagree, but the Soviets looked back to all the ancients just like we did, the Athenians, the Greeks, the Italians, and others, to set up their system. And it was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And we were told that Lenin and Stalin and everybody else were a bunch of dictators, just like their people were probably told that ours were the same thing, that they were dictators and whatever. But it was a republic or a system of republics that had joined together just like the United States. And we were pitted against each other, centered on one thing and one thing only. And what was that? Germany.
Ah, Germany.
East and West Germany. And you go to the old adage of, you know, you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Well, Germany basically did, and this is one of the things that I talk about, is that you've probably seen movies like Hamburger Hill or Platoon. Where, and I'm trying to think of which movie, I think in both movies they have a piece like this, but when a command is being overrun in war, and they're out, you know, in a war zone, and it's clear that they're going to lose everything. They will call in an airstrike on top of their own heads so that anybody that's not hunkered down and in a, you know, ditch that's been dug for, you know, defensive purposes will get wiped out. They call in an airstrike and it wipes out the enemy who is exposed, and hopefully you've survived, or as many people as possible have survived the airstrike, and you come out, you shake off the dirt, and, you know, you start to rebuild and refortify your encampment. They're doing the same thing on a larger scale and doing it economically to the American people. They've called it an airstrike, the bailout. You know, that is about devaluing the dollar, outsourcing jobs. All of this stuff is targeted at taking down the United States, just like they did with the former Soviet Union.
Why do you why do you think the people haven't risen up en masse to deal with this? I mean, it's just so blatant that they're stealing trillions of dollars out of our economy for the benefit of the banksters. Why aren't people as angry as they should be about this?
People are trusting. Most people are decent people. They are. They work hard. They want to raise a family, educate their family, have kids, have fun, and, you know, they don't want to be involved in war. They don't initiate wars. Most people become uncivil when, like, what is going on a grand scale, they're poked and prodded, whether it be this the Quran burning, whether it be the mosque in New York. These are smoke and mirror issues that are being funded and backed and raised by some very big money. And it is to incite civil unrest, to get people at each other's throats, because they know that, you know, think about this. If in a country of 330 million people, if they only fleece 10% of us, one in every 10 people, that's still 33 million people that they can grab a hold of and shake all of your wealth out of you and put in their own pockets. And they're doing this, whether it be the mortgage scandal, the banking scandal, scandals going on within the SEC, Chrysler, GM. It's just for people not to realize that, A, this is not coming from within our own country, that we have a fifth column, people that are acting like they're Americans, pretending to be Americans, even appear to be Americans, speak English, were even born here, but they're not acting in the best interest of America, of by and for the people, in the Constitution. They believe in a system of United Kingdoms. They believe in these royal families that, by their own declaration and or admission, have been given some kind of divine right to rule over the rest of us. This battle is the central battle to everything going on in the world for the last several thousand years. It is it's those who believe in kingdoms, kings and queens and royalty and crown families, who are making republics and systems of self-governance ungovernable, so that they can come in and say, look, it doesn't work. You can't govern yourselves. We have to have a group of elites or aristocrats or oligarchs or others who are better educated, better bred, who understand the larger issues. When a lot of these larger issues, like even if you get into the banking issues, it's all a giant Ponzi scheme. Look what Madoff was able to pull off. $50-65 billion to some very well educated, very intelligent people like Spielberg and others, and no one was the wiser, even though you had whistleblowers coming out like myself and others, not, you know, on that particular issue. I'm coming out about not only the Coast Guard, you know, being converted into a branch of military somehow, but it carrying on military tribunals and saying it can administer civilian affairs. My whistleblowing didn't start there. They've actually created this nightmare to stifle and shut up what I was complaining about, which is the United States Merchant Marine, where we have 97% of our cargo coming into the United States and leaving the United States, our international cargo, going on foreign flag ships, to where we can't raise a simple grievance about pay, vacation, a day off, and get into a neutral system of, you know, grievance and arbitration on even simple issues, let alone more complex issues of, say, the captain being involved in smuggling individuals or even, shoulder-launched rocket-propelled grenades into the United States. And that is that shows that there are intentional and individuals behind what is going on that want to take down the United States, that understand that it is so lucrative that when you build a republic, all the wealth doesn't go to a crown family or a set of royal families. It goes to the people. It goes into this virtual bank that we all share in, that we all have a part in, and that it's basically just sitting there like a large kitty, and that if the republic goes away, the United States, or there's a change in name, change in title, you could call it a bankruptcy if you wish, that they get to grab and break up who gets all these assets, all these resources.
Exactly. And that's exactly why the United States was the industrial and economic engine of the world for so long, and why it's been sort of a long and slow decline since 1913, when obviously the consolidation of power in the hands of the Federal Reserve happened, and we all know who's really behind the Federal Reserve, which is the same.
Who was the industrial might before that?
Well, I guess Britain.
Well, Germany. Well, Britain was more of a...
Well, they were an empire, I guess. But
yeah, because, well, and England was kind of a different, it was more naval, it didn't have a standing army and more, and it was more of a, they used other people rather than where in Germany. Germany was a very civilized, very well-developed, civilization or country, the Weimar Republic and more, before Hitler came into power.
Right. Well, I should correct myself. You're absolutely right. In terms of industrial engine of the world, it would have been Germany. But in terms of trade, it would have been Britain.
Well, and take this as like a pictorial or a pictorial way of displaying that, I guess, for want of a better way of saying it. You know, like the locusts, like in the movie Independence Day, you know, they come on a planet and just rob the planet of all the resources, then move on to the next. You know, the aliens that are portrayed in the movie Independence Day. This is exactly what is going on with these fascists, these corporate families, these large, you could call it landowners, nobility, aristocrats, and more, Queen Beatrix being one, like Royal Dutch Shell. She's made part of nobility, people from Hollywood, like Stephen Gillenham, Stephen Gillenham, Gyllenhaal. Jake Gyllenhaal, he's been in Brokeback Mountain, a bunch of other movies, and his sister, she was like the love interest in Batman movie. They were made part of the nobility by the Swedish royal family, and not just knighted like George Herbert Walker Bush was, or Ronald Reagan, and even Greenspan and Kissinger and others. You know, Kissinger was born in Bavaria, raised in London to an age, and then came here to the United States, and I say to Petraeus, but if you look at that and take that concept of what's portrayed in the movie Independence Day, they move from Germany, industrialize it, and then just like Martin Bormann did in taking 750 corporate families, their names, their family members, their intellectual property, their banking accounts, and more out of the country and outsourcing them to the world before the empire fell, they came to places like America. And now it's not America. We're in the same position that Germany was at that time. They want to expand us under an imperial state to basically implode us and have us, you know, cave back in upon ourselves, to have China be the next super state.
Unfortunately, that's right. China has been being set up for quite a while now to be the next leader of the world, and we have Soros constantly talking about China as the new engine for the new world order, and he uses that exact phrase, actually, the new economic engine of the new world order. We also had David Rockefeller, even back in the 70s, extolling Chairman Mao and saying that the one-child policy was a model for the world, and we've seen that kind of rhetoric over and over, so we certainly know the direction that the elites are trying to set the world up in. Do you see any other place now in the world acting as the type of beacon that the United States was when it was a republic, as an alternative to the China model?
Well, I think this whole concept of, and I actually I'd seen it in, there's a new TV series out called Rubicon, and they talk about this in there about, you know, and the guy goes off on the whole concept of what a cell is. That there is no beacon, there is no America anymore, but that freedom, democracy, self-governance, anything of, by, and for the people, people sticking up for themselves and or others, is going to be more of a cellular, where it's not like the nation of the United States. It's not collective. It will be individuals popping up here and there. And what they'll do, just like they've done in Colombia or countries like Colombia and more, is they will go down and quash and take out the, just like they've done with me. You know, I'm defending myself as an alleged civilian against a special self-declared branch of military, the Coast Guard, within Homeland Security, that I'm not in, never served in, and that they're using medical officers in uniform from the Coast Guard to have me declared medically, mentally incompetent. I mean, how far over the edge do people need to hear and understand that we're there? There's no tipping point. We're beyond the tipping point. When you have a civil service agency like the Coast Guard turned into a branch of military, this happened in 2003, to where they're a branch of military, not in the Department of Defense, but in Homeland Security, and they're coming under military law, which is a form of martial law, and no one even understands this. I'm, you know, one of the few people out there really saying anything about this and complaining and saying, you know, oh my God. It's going to be more, they brought on this issue of globalization. I think the answer to it and the response to it is going to come in the same fashion. It's going to be a global movement. And it was, even if you look back into the 1700s, it wasn't just, it was the French Revolution. It was a revolution here in the United States. It was a revolution in Russia. It was a revolution in Mexico. It's that, you know, you could call it that shot heard around the world, like when our revolution started, or that event that sparks it to where people, because people are pissed. They've had it. They've had enough. And they're to the point now, and they've done this, and I use the, I guess, the image or imagery that the American people, and I could say the people of the world, are like a jar of bees. And the hand on it is, whether you wanted to call it the New World Order, the United Kingdom, the reinvigorated United Kingdom, the royals, or whatever, that hand on the jar is shaking that jar, getting the bees all pissed off, so that they can basically uncork it, take the cap off, and throw those bees at whomever they want. And you can see the rage and the blind rage, the blood rage that is going on in certain people, even in the events in New York involving the mosque. And, I mean, how can we have book burning? I don't care what book it is. How can you have or even advocate or allow, yes, it's an issue of free speech, and yes, it's an expression of free speech. You know, free speech is not something that's just verbal or written. It can also be like, you know, a form of art and or even a protest or whatever. And, you know, but burning the Quran, a book that a lot of people believe is a holy text, or the Bible, or I don't care if it's the Handbook for the Boy Scouts of America, it is wrong. And people, we don't need to rely on the government. We don't even shouldn't have to rely on the courts. And I'm not talking about mob rule. I'm not talking about a posse. I'm talking about people treating these people as if they are your peers, whether they're this, you know, Bonehead Jones in Florida with the burning the Quran, or what's going on with the mosque in New York, or any other incident like what's going on in my own incident with the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard Commandant is our peer. This is of, by, and for the people. Until the people wake up and start to hold these people accountable individually and don't allow them to do this to anyone. In our own Civil War and prior to it, the slavers in the South used to go up into the North, and because of the whole concept of the Electoral College, the different states and or districts get electors by their by the numbers in the state, by the head count. And it's not in for the Electoral College, it's everybody. If you're an American Indian, a member of a, you know, different nation state, if you're a slave, if you're an orphan, if you're a child, then you're not old enough to vote. Even back in the day, if you were a woman and didn't have the right to vote, or black or a slave, the Electoral College counted just the number of heads. It didn't care who you were. It just wanted a number count. And that gave you your electors. Because of that, the slavers in the South would go up to the North and grab black men, free black men that had lived all their lives and their parents' lives as free men. They would grab them and bring them down to the South so that they would have more people to count and they could get more electoral college votes. This is the kind of stuff that goes on that people don't understand our system well enough. That's why they put prisons in certain districts, like a lot of Republican districts, because those prisoners, although they lose their right to vote, they are counted as a head count, as a part of the tally and the toll toward the Electoral College. There are things like this that need to be corrected here in our country, and I'm not saying that the Electoral College was not a bad idea. Even now, those who are trying to take down our country and do so from within, those who are loyalists and or royalists, they use what came up with the Electoral College to say that black people were given, were counted as three-fifths of a person. Well, that's not really true. Anyone, even a child or a woman who could not vote, were counted in this. The reason the three-fifths number came up was because there was more people who did not have the direct right to vote in, you know, elections, that if they were all given one vote or one head count in the Electoral College, the Electoral College, they could, people, you know, children, people who are not educated, foreigners, because it counts foreigners just as well, people, resident aliens and others, or even illegal aliens, it counts these people as well, then all of these individuals who did not have either the education, the exposure, the understanding to vote on issues, even to read, you know, what the issue was about, could somehow overthrow the government without even their own knowledge, and they could be used as a weapon in that fashion. And that's where the three-fifths number came from, to make it so that all of these people in their entirety did not equate to a number greater than the number of people that could vote. But because people don't understand this, all of this stuff gets misconstrued. And anyone who tries to come out and explain it, like myself and others, comes under attack.
Right. Well, let's go back to what you were saying earlier, because you brought up some extremely important points there that I'd like to go over a little bit more detail. You talk about the way that people are being sort of shaken up or stirred up like a hornet's nest, and people are being whipped up into such frenzy over issues, obviously, that are being manipulated, like the Ground Zero mosque distraction that we've talked about, where the funding
abortion
is coming from.
Abortion
is another issue, absolutely, that is used.
Marijuana. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think it, but it's another.
I agree completely that these issues are used, and it does seem that there is, because I think there at the same time, there are people who are so genuinely angry about a lot of the real, true corruption that we do see going on, the trillions that are being stolen from under our nose and so on, and I think that they're trying to play on that and trying to direct those energies towards things that are of politically no significance. So I guess the question is, how do we redirect those energies or refocus people on the issues that actually matter?
Well, what's important in all this is that you have to understand that all the people that are involved in the bailout and Chrysler and GM and, you know, the home mortgage scandal and banking scandals and more, it's all the same group. It's a very tight-knit group of families who have, like King, you know, who I've run into myself numerous times in my own affairs, they're helping each other out. If you start to go after one of these, like this issue with the Coast Guard, I would ask people to get involved and become informed on it. It is unconstitutional for any branch of military. The Coast Guard is saying it's a branch of military now. Well, in Title 10, which governs, you know, it's military law that governs the entire Department of Defense, all the military personnel. If the Coast Guard is saying that it now comes under it, then it's supposed to be under the Navy. It's supposed to be in DOD. It's supposed to shed all of its police and regulatory functions. But there's, you know, what they've done is they've married when it's normally under Title 10 under the Navy with when it's normally under Title 14, which is when it's a federal maritime police agency. They've married the two together, and they put Title 10 on top with the police and regulatory functions under the military functions, which is martial law, it's military law, that if people would help out on just this one issue, they would be amazed to find out how many of these other issues start to fall off, because it's the very same people that are involved in my own affairs that are involved in other affairs. I'll give you an example. Alex Kaczynski, he's a Ninth Circuit justice who has his fingerprints and his signature on my documents. He's involved directly in it. He pulled my appeal in the Ninth Circuit off calendar. It wasn't before him. I actually put in the appeal that I knew who he was, and I put in the appeal that he not have anything to do with the case because he was Office of Special Counsel, Chief Counsel for the Executive Branch. He was teaching agencies, departments, and corporations how to violate the whistleblower protection law when he was actually charged with teaching them how to abide by the law. He was censured by 43 senators, booted from his position as Chief Counsel of the Office of Special Counsel, and then ends up as a basically the man in charge of the Ninth Circuit. He's probably one of the most powerful judges on it, the most outspoken. He's tried to keep it as an unwieldy, you know, behemoth in the Ninth Circuit. He's not only involved in my own affairs, this guy should never be working in federal service at all, but because we have not paid attention to who these people are, put out, you know, our own deck of cards, just like they tried to do with the Iraqis and stuff or whatever, 52 or 54 cards on, you know, who's the ace of spades and whatever, of what they've done, who they are, and how they've been censured by the Senate, United States Senate. This guy was censured, booted from his position. He ends up on top of the Ninth Circuit. He's involved in my own affairs. The judge, Brzezinski, who's sitting on the case right now, as he's a lieutenant commander in the Coast Guard, he has ruled on commerce cases involving Iran, blocking oil parts from getting into Iran in the lead-up to the war to carry on war profiteering and oil profiteering. So these guys are dirty as they come. He's also sat on and was involved with Kenneth Feinberg. Feinberg is the Pazar for Obama. And you got to look at Obama. Why would Obama bring this guy into his administration, Feinberg, when he's been involved in everything from Monsanto, from asbestos, from Agent Orange with Dow and Dow Corning and other companies where they set up these enormous trust funds like the $20 billion that they just did with BP to come in and keep as much money away from the beneficiaries that the fund is set up to benefit and help, keep as much money in the trust fund as possible, and then pocket it. Come in and raid the trust fund later on. So very little of that $20 billion is actually going to go to the people of the Gulf that were affected by the BP oil disaster. It's going to stay in that fund, and they will come back in and raid it later. And this is an accounting practice that they do and carry on, and a banking practice. But if people would start to circle their wagons around any single issue, pick one, black box voting, you know, I could throw out all kinds of war itself, what's going on in Iran, Afghanistan, soon to be Iran, Pakistan, and more. We need to bring our troops home. These are not defensive wars. These are wars of aggression, just like Germany carried out in World War II and World War I. They are wars of conquest. They are not wars of defense. But if people get active and start to educate themselves and pick an issue, become an expert on it, start to talk out about it, get out on, I mean, our government of, by, and for the people only works when we, the people, doesn't matter where you reside, Japan or here in the United States or Mexico or Europe or, you know, there's a lot of expatriates down in Central and South America. Jesse Ventura has been living out of the country. He's been very active in trying to, you know, bring the truth out, speak out, be involved because he loves his country.
I'd just like to interject there. I mean, personally, I'm a Canadian citizen living in Japan, so I certainly don't do what I do because of allegiance to any one country, but I guess to the philosophical ideal that's represented in the concept of a republic, and I just obviously understand that to be one of the greatest achievements of human society so far, and I think that anybody on the planet can fight for that ideal.
But, I mean, if you see us fall, what's going to happen to Canada?
Well, exactly, and I think that's the other side of it, that America has been the beacon and is now kind of the canary in the coal mine.
But you also understand that Canada is a constitutional monarchy.
Absolutely. Ruled by the Queen at her pleasure.
Right, and I've gotten into fights. I've actually gotten kicked off of blogs by people in Canada who are running blogs for people like Mike Malloy. He's a radio show host on K-Talk and AM 1150 in LA or whatever, they said that I was I'm trying to think of the term. I wouldn't accept. You know, I'm adamant. I am an anti-monarchist. I am opposed to royal families and kingdoms. I believe that the people should be able to, and that they are capable of. You know, especially if we have a public education system that works and that educates the people as they need to be educated, and that we have a media that educates the people as well. You know, continuously. But I don't believe that all of the struggles, all of the wars throughout history have basically centered on those two ideals, whether you want to live in a kingdom or you want to live in a republic, a system of self-governance. And the point I was trying to make was, in a republic, we, the people, are the last line of oversight. If we do not carry on oversight and write our congressmen, write our senators, become involved, speak out, if we hold our tongue, then our system of governance does not work. Our system of self-governance does not work.
Well, that's exactly right. People have to speak out or lose it. And you point out that the way in which the alternative side, the monarchical side, works is through an elite association of a small clique of families that support each other in all of their numerous operations. So does that present an idea for the type of resistance that we have to put up? I mean, is there a sense in which we have to work together in tightly knit communities in order to be effective, or can the resistance be decentralized?
Well, the point I was trying to make about the slavers and electoral college and stuff, and I got sidetracked there a little bit, was that when the slavers used to go up to the north and grab free black men to bring them down to get the electoral college votes, what would happen was the local communities would often circle the wagons, quote unquote, around the black man and say, look, we don't care if he's black. He's our neighbor. He's our friend. He owes us favors and we owe him favors. And you're not going to take him out of our community. If you do, there will be hell to pay, and we'll have your skin. Yeah, I mean, every state, every community should find out where their soldiers are at, where their own people from their own community are. What is going on with them? I've got guys like I've talked about. I can't think of his name. It'll come to me in a minute. But what had happened to him was Townsend, I think is his name. He had gotten hit by a 109-millimeter mortar shell. He was in the military over in Iraq, I believe. Knocked him out, hit the building above him, knocked him out, blood coming out of his ears, unconscious. The military, rather than finding a desk job for this guy and keeping him in the military and finding something for him to do because he'd been injured, you know, in service, they drum him out. He owed the military because of a recommissioning or re-upping bonus. And they're using this as part of what I talked about, the dead peasants insurance, to keep a tab and track on these guys, where he owed the military $3,000. He got injured in the military. He has permanent damage, and his mom has spoken out, but these people don't have the education, they don't have the wealth, they don't have the family connections to stand up and fight for what is right. And what they're doing is they're the only way that they can succeed is if we allow them to take us apart at each weak link. I'm a weak link. I'm standing up, you know, even though I went to a military academy, naval officer and more, well-educated, supposedly. I've been attacked even for that, the way I speak or write or whatever. I don't think people can even imagine what I've been through. They go after and use prisoners. They go after and use immigrant babies, you know, anchor babies. They go after anyone and everyone who cannot defend themselves to change the law, to change the Constitution, to change your fundamental rights. And right now, because people are not circling the wagons on a more specific and directed matter, or even on a more collective matter like the wars and bringing our troops home from 139 countries around the world, including Japan, we probably have them in Canada as well. You know, I think we are the military for Canada, more or less, you know, NORTHCOM. But people have to become active. You cannot be afraid, because if you turn your back, you turn a blind eye, you close your eyes, you shut your mouth, there will be hell to pay for it, and it will be your hide in the end that does so. Because these powers that are doing this, these individuals, royalists, loyalists, elitists, whatever you want to call them, corporatists, fascists, the end game is war. And I'm talking about worldwide war. And they are doing a very good job of pushing us to that brink. And just like the hand on the jar of bees, they're shaking up not just the American people, getting them agitated, aggravated, angry. They're doing it around the world.
Absolutely true. And that's absolutely so important what you've just said. And I really hope people will cogitate on that, because circling the wagons is exactly what we need to be doing right now. We need to find those areas of society where people are being targeted or where issues are being raised that we can all agree that we need to circle the wagons, and we need to have that type of community spirit. And I think that's exactly why that type of community spirit or the sense of camaraderie is trying to be engineered out of us on a societal level at every turn in every possible way. So extremely important.
But you look at James, you look at people like Campion and Ramos, two Border Patrol agents, right? Because they had a very strong family that supported them, they were able to fight and not, you know, necessarily defend themselves as they should have been. They should still be in service. As far as I'm concerned, they shot a, you know, a drug smuggler who was convicted and then found to be smuggling drugs in after and given a plea deal and all kinds of other stuff. They shot him in the butt, and because they didn't file the right paperwork, they went up on special weapons charges and everything else and were doing 10 years in jail. They're out now because people circled the wagons. These guys could still be in jail right now.
Yes, that's exactly right. And there you go. There's a case of where it is actually successful. And we should also point to cases of successful circling of the wagons, because that, I think, provides ideas for people to act in the future. So that's important as well. But as we come to the last few minutes of interview.
Wait, James, real quick. And you got to remember in that we live in a common law country, good or bad, right or wrong, that whatever they get away with and can do to one person, they take that as the law then, as case precedence under common law, and they apply it to everyone else.
That's right. So what we allow to happen to someone else will be eventually applied to us, or is in by force of law applied to us. So as we come to the last few minutes of this interview, are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave on any of the topics that we've talked about so far today?
Well, again, I could really use help, and whether it's Canadian or Australian or Englishman or somebody who, you know, believes in justice, let alone an American, you know, a citizen of this great republic, I need legal help. I need a legal defense fund. I need a publicist. You know, I even, in the midst of all this standing up against a branch of military myself, by myself, tried to find the means to hire a publicist. It turns out that they hired the wrong person, but and I've been doing radio interviews, and I even got my own radio show going, and I thank John Stadtmiller and people on Republic Broadcasting Network for giving me the show. And I was on Genesis Communications Network for a while as well, the same network that Alex Jones was on. And beyond any of the politics and all of that and what I believe about Jones and others, I thank those people for that, because at least it's allowed me to keep my head above water to some degree. And I thank you as well for doing what you've done. But, you know, they are only going to succeed in my own instance. They're saying that this is case precedence, that this is a case of first impression. That means that this will set precedence, where they're not only charging me for a branch of military is charging me as an alleged civilian, but they're charging me for a state of mind. They're charging me under what is called a mens rea prosecution, which is exactly what went on under the Privy Council or Star Chambers. They would actually take an individual, summarize your life and how you led it, venial sins, mortal sins, and, you know, whatever, and basically judge you for it and then execute you for it. And that is exactly what's going on. In a sophisticated or more civilized world, the more sophisticated we become, the greater our protections need to be for privacy, for privilege, for due process, for free speech, and more, not less.
That's right. Well, tell people once again the websites and how they can tune into your radio broadcast.
Well, www.martiallaw911.com, MERTIALLAW911.com. apologize. You know, you could use a good web developer big time. The other one is www.crossingtherubicon.org. And then republicbroadcasting.org. My program is In the Zone. It's now on Saturday nights at 9 o'clock Pacific, which is 11 o'clock Central. It's only an hour, but hopefully that will expand. You can contact the network and ask them to, you know, expand my program. I'd like to have you on the radio program if you can, you know, set the time aside and come on for an hour or so.
I would be happy to be on anytime you wanted me. Just let me know.
Saturday.
I can do it.
You got the time, right?
Yes, I
heard
that.
So that's 9 p.m. Central.
Yep.
And that would be tomorrow.
I thought it was 2 p.m. Central, but 9 p.m. would be even better.
No, mine had changed. It was on Sundays, and it's now on Saturdays.
I see. Okay, yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely. I hope people will check out your websites because there's a lot of information there, and also they can check out some of our previous talks to hear more about your personal case. But we'll have to end it there for now. For people who are listening on CorbettReport.com, you can also go to a second interview that we're about to record here on the subject of Germany and Germania. So that should be extremely interesting. But let's just end this first interview here. And Lieutenant Schein, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, James.